From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. State health officials are asking Alaska vaccine providers to follow federal recommendations to pause use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines while researchers figure out the clotting risk. Nearly 7 million doses have been administered in the U.S., including more than 11,000 in Alaska, and six women have developed a rare type of blood clot afterward. None of those cases were in Alaska. Today, state medical officials said they'll be talking to all of the Johnson & Johnson providers in the state about what to look for and what to do with the vaccine they currently have. Pharmacist Coleman Cutchins said this type of issue with new drugs happens often because clinical trials are performed on just a few thousand people. Then when the drug or vaccine gets to market and millions of people start taking it, these types of rare side effects become clear.
I remind people that ibuprofen has a similar bleeding risk to this, and it's in the black box warning on the packaging.
The specific type of clot that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is investigating can cause a lot of pressure to build in the brain. The symptoms vary, but Providence, Alaska Medical Center Dr. Lisa Rabinowitz said when it's severe, symptoms are similar to a stroke.
Think of it in terms of the severe symptoms we're looking for are similar to a stroke. So headache, visual changes, dizziness, syncope or passing out, decreased coordination or weakness on one side, one arm, one leg, seizures, and even coma.
The CDC told NPR that people who got a Johnson & Johnson shot more than a month ago are at low risk for developing a clot, but people who got one within the last few weeks should be on the lookout for symptoms and if they seek medical treatment to let doctors know they're recently vaccinated. Some providers in Alaska say that halting use of the vaccine won't have much of an impact. A spokesperson for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium says they've primarily been using the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. They had just ordered a few hundred doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and will hold them until they get further guidance. In other news, Southeast Alaska leaders and residents last week testified for restoration of state funding cuts and, in some cases, additional state money to make up for a loss of federal funding. Those were some of the voices heard by the Alaska House Finance Committee as it considers a state operating budget for the upcoming year. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
Many voices and letters from across the state are asking legislators to make up for a loss of federal funding for organizations that provide help to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Alaska's Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault has informed organizations to expect a 30% to 33% reduction in grant programs. Natalie Wojcik is executive director of Sitkins Against Family Violence and said that would mean a $230,000 cut for her organization.
We've had to start looking at what difficult choices we have to make. If we are to endure the full 30% cut, we are looking to cut our legal advocacy services to victims in half, reduce on-call advocacy for the shelter and sexual assault response, and entirely cut our children's programming. I'm reaching out to let you know what is happening and the dire consequences it will have not only on SICA, but the entire state.
Organizations ask lawmakers to budget state general fund dollars to make up for that lost federal money. Sarah Hansen-Hofstetter is a board member of Working Against Violence for Everyone, or WAVE, in Petersburg.
If WAVE loses 30% funding, the cuts will have devastating impacts on survivors, victims, their families, and the community work WAVE is conducting.
The statewide council is also seeking a federal fix or emergency aid that could cover the funding cut, but it's not likely that would be in place in time for the fiscal year that starts in July. Lawmakers also heard from representatives of municipalities and nonprofits seeking restoration of state funding that the governor had vetoed from the budget in the last few years. Melissa Henshaw, Public and Government Relations Director for the City and Borough of Sitka, urged legislators to fund reimbursement for school bond debt and other payments to municipalities.
The state's proposed budget is half the original commitment for a loss to Sitka of over $1.6 million. We ask for your support for the Community Assistance Program that has decreased by more than half from 2015, in which over $900,000 was budgeted. For fiscal year 2022, the state proposed budget is $415,000 to SICA.
Ketchikan Gateway Borough Mayor Rodney Dial testified his community has lost over $200 million in economic activity as residents there face high unemployment and major increases in living costs.
So with all that going on, it becomes easy to see that our citizens need local government help more than ever, but our ability to provide that help has been greatly diminished by our tax revenues as they have cratered. So for that reason, we desperately need the state to honor its commitment regarding programs like school bond debt reimbursement. I completely understand the state's fiscal condition. However, canceling debt reimbursement was a discriminatory action that only impacted the organized boroughs of the state.
The state had reimbursed municipalities up to 70% for school and other projects that were bonded. Governor Dunleavy vetoed half of that money in 2019 and all of it last year, with the legislature not voting to override those vetoes. Dial also asked for restoration of funding for community assistance payments to cities and boroughs, as well as adequate state funding for the Alaska Marine Highway System. That was a concern for Helen Clow of Juneau. She told lawmakers that inconsistent and unreliable service is a death knell for the ferry system.
You guys have got to find a way to increase funding and provide several things. Number one, improve consistent maintenance, some long-term funding for replacement vessels, use of Marine Highway staff when appropriate to do maintenance repairs rather than sending off to shipyards, and finding some way to have at least two vessels always operating in Southeast so that there is redundancy. And so in the case of a breakdown, people's cars aren't stranded forever.
She thought a strong ferry system would bring many independent travelers to the state this summer and fill a gap left by the loss of large cruise ships. Tom Bryce of Juneau, a University of Alaska Fairbanks alum, called for a plan to stop the bleeding, as he called it, for university funding.
The university is a tool that will generate our engineers, teachers, and healthcare professionals for our state's future, maybe even a few politicians. Coordinated efforts to cross-track COVID relief and infrastructure dollars with real needs the university is facing now can help divert limited general fund dollars back into the classroom to stabilize those needs.
Others testified for reinstatement of state support for public radio, against cuts to Department of Motor Vehicle offices, and for flat funding for school districts. The committee had public testimony scheduled from around the state into the weekend as it drafts the state's operating budget for the new fiscal year that starts in July. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Some activists in Juneau filed paperwork on Monday that could lead to local ballot questions in the fall asking voters to limit cruise ships' access to the capital city. Carla Hart filed the official paperwork. She's been critical of the crowding and impacts on quality of life that have come with the growth in cruise ship tourism. She's also concerned that Juneau has become too dependent on the economic power wielded by a few cruise lines.
I'm a big believer in direct democracy, and this is a chance for us to say if we think that there are too many people coming on cruise ships to Juneau, and to say if we think that people in Juneau want to have evenings quiet and for ourselves and the community and people who are staying over, and whether we want Saturdays for ourselves and the community and for people staying over.
Hart is proposing three amendments to the City and Borough of Juneau's charter. The first would ban big cruise ships in town between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. The second would ban big cruise ships on Saturdays. The third would ban cruise ships over a certain size beginning in 2026. It would affect megaships like the Ovation of the Seas, as well as some of the less extraordinary ships that have visited Juneau over the years. Hart says she isn't trying to stop the industry, just strike a better balance. Hart's paperwork is the first step in the ballot initiative process. The city clerk has until May 3rd to certify or deny the paperwork. If there are no problems, Hart and the other organizers' next big hurdle will be to collect nearly 3,000 signatures of qualified local voters over 30 days.
I would encourage people who think that everyone in the community loves the cruise industry and will vote no on these to sign the initiatives and to put it on the ballot so we can put this to rest.
the charter amendment questions could appear on ballots in the next regular municipal election on October 5th. The industry group Cruise Lines International Association Alaska provided a statement by email. Spokesperson Lainey Downs says the possibility of a second season without cruise traffic is hurting Juneau and that Hart's initiatives could lead to further losses that could devastate Juneau. This is KTOO News.